Good morning.
Good morning.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah, yes. I brought my clock with me because my eyes aren't that good, so I wanted to make sure I didn't interrupt lunch. Can't have that. Let's take a moment and quiet down. Feet together on the floor in front of you. Sit up straight. Just allow relaxation to kind of flow down over your head and down your face. Cross your shoulders. Loosen your shoulders. Just relax. Let everything go. Let the tension go. We hold a lot of tension in our neck. Let your awareness fall down into the center of your chest, your heart, and then down into the lower abdomen, your hara. And just breathe for a moment. Just sit. Bring your attention back into the room. That was perfect. That's always there. It's always been there. It's there now, and it'll always be there. The title of what I wanted to talk about today is You Are the Buddha. Being unillumined, we have a lot of ideas about what that might mean. Generally, not exactly accurate. My teacher, I have two teachers actually, Gaugu in Tallahassee, has helped me a great deal. And then my more personal teacher that I have more contact with regularly, Reverend Vivian, who's a monk and priest from Shasta Abbey. She has a hermitage in the Sierras. And we have a Zoom meeting every week, and she's frequently there, and she's always available. One time we were talking, and I said, well, you know, I'm not a lumen. She said, John, you're a lumen. And sometimes people take that incorrectly. I mean, somehow you're elevated or different or special. And recently we celebrated a holiday. We celebrate December 8th. In Japanese, it's called Rohatsu. It's the morning of the Buddha's awakening, his realization. You know, I want to talk about Buddhism and its 2,600 years of practice and understanding and training. So I got a half hour. Well, I'll do the best I can. So I want to start with his awakening. It was a talk she gave a week or so ago around the time of Rohatsu. The morning that some of you may be familiar with the story, and we can talk about that sometime, his practice, his realization, his life, and what happened. But basically, he sat under a bow tree, story goes, all night with a vow he would not move till he awakened. He'd been training as a monk in the forest for 6 or 7 years, harsh, rigorous ascetic practices. It didn't answer his question. Why is there suffering? How to end suffering? So the day of December 8th, which is the day we celebrate it, no telling if that's accurate or not, but good enough, it's a day. And that morning he saw the morning star, Venus, and it all fell away. And he said, I was, I am, and I always shall be. Enlightened with all things, the sun, the moon, the stars, all sentient beings. And Reverend Vivian said something interesting. At that moment, that was it. Everything was awakened. That hasn't stopped. So how come we don't feel that way? How come we don't live that way? What's the barrier that stands between us and that realization? And so, hence 2,600 years or so of practice and training, study, discipline of the body. And I don't mean punishment, I mean training, discipline of the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, to take control, to practice, which is what Buddhists do, they practice. And gradually, things start to sort themselves out. There's three fundamental principles that all Buddhists follow. Anicca, anatta, and shunyata. Impermanence, emptiness, no self. What is the nature of all this? It's impermanent. That's kind of obvious. Nothing is eternal. The universe seems eternal to us, but it's only 13 billion years old. I don't know how they know that. I'm not qualified to argue or debate, but it had a beginning. Theoretically, it'll have an end. Everything has a beginning, exists for a while, and then ceases to exist. Causes and conditions come together that bring something into being. A man and a woman met, fell in love, hopefully, had sex, certainly, and you're here. Causes and conditions, a moment in time, and you're the result of that. Everything is like that, impermanent. So that's kind of easy for modern people to grasp. Emptiness is something we struggle with because as Westerners, we think of void or non-existent, which is part of it, but emptiness means relationship. Shunyata, emptiness, means relationship. And the image that an Asian will also often use to describe the feeling is a newborn infant at a mother's breast. Close. Connected to everything. And then no self, he realized, is the cause of suffering. Classically, it's said that he left the palace. He'd been sheltered for decades as a child and a young man. And he saw the world as it really is. His father, a ruler, was trying to hide reality from him. At first, he saw a woman giving birth by the side of the road. And then he saw an old person struggling. And then he saw a diseased person. And then he saw a dead body as he traveled. Birth, old age, disease, and death is suffering. Interestingly, it's not that birth, old age, or death, or disease is suffering. Those are just the experiences of reality. That's all. But because we think we have a separate self, I'm over here, you're over there, we're not really connected. Actually, if we're here together, were all happening together. Instantaneously, moment by moment, reality is constantly arising, but we don't see that. We have a psychologists talk about having a well-formed ego. What that means is you weren't born with one, you created it. And so we have to practice to sort of break through the barriers in our minds and in our cultures to see how things really are, because in fact they are impermanent, empty, and selfless. And that's really a wonderful thing, but we may not always realize it. We may have reactions or thoughts or opinions. So how do we train? You start with the body and you sit. And I can't sit in the lotus position anymore. I used to, full lotus, and it was always difficult, and it kept getting more and more difficult. And I sat a lot of times in a chair, and I found that this is really the most comfortable position for me because I can rotate my hips forward, I can pull my shoulders back over my hips, my nose is in line with my navel. And I just sit. Now, thoughts come up. Discursive thought. Your mind is always rolling, working. And some people try to struggle with those thoughts, or fight them, or resist them, or whatever. Really, you just let them go. They're like clouds in the sky. You don't have to hook in. I always use the analogy of an argument that I kept repeating and trying to win with people that have been dead for 30 years. You know, maybe some of you have had that experience. How often am I going to review that piece of gristle in my mind and heart and just let it go? Just let it go. And so it's not about thinking or not thinking. It's about just letting the mind do what it does and not being distracted, not getting hooked in. What I found as I continued with that practice is gradually the chatter quiets down. It's slow. It takes time. The old habits die hard, and you just let it go, and you let it go, you let it go, you let it go. And then one day you just find you're in this wonderful, quiet place. You're awake. You're alive. You're conscious. But there's no noise. There's no jangle. There's no edge. There's no struggle. So there's some practices. I talked with Reverend Vivian about what I should share about that process, because what attracted me to Buddhism initially and has constantly kept my attention, I just can't quit, is there was something I could do, something this little person could do to understand, to begin to get something. Traditionally, there's 16 vows that we take, 16 precepts. And so the first, I'm going to run through those 16 quickly, and it's part of a practice. And so the first thing is to take refuge. And so we say, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Buddha is the source of teaching, the one who awakened and is awakening and always shall awaken. The Dharma means the teaching. It means a thing. Dharma means thing, lowercase d. Uppercase D means the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha thing. And the Sangha is the fellowship, the people that you're together with, the community. Those are the first three. And then the next three precepts are cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Well, that's a lot, you know, you have to decide what's evil and what's not. You have to decide what's good and what's not, and what others need and what they don't need. It's not so easy. So that leads to the 10 great precepts. They're called the 10 great precepts. I will refrain from killing. I will refrain from stealing. I will refrain from coveting, craving, clinging. I will refrain from telling untruths, from lying. I will refrain from indulging in intoxicants. We'll come back to that one. I will refrain in giving either dharma or wealth. I will refrain from speaking against others. I will refrain from elevating myself and demeaning others, or vice versa. I will refrain from indulging in anger. I will refrain from besmirching the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Sounds a lot like the Ten Commandments, but it's very different. First of all, it's not an instruction from an authority. It's the nature of reality. Those are the good things to do. Killing can be literally killing or metaphorically killing. You can kill someone's spirit. You can kill someone's joy. Those are all kinds of killing. Stealing, lying, coveting. Indulging in intoxicants. Why was the Buddha against alcohol or drugs? He was asked and he said, it makes you heedless. You should stay aware. You should stay present. So those 16 principles are the principles that lay practitioners practice. I think the monks have hundreds of precepts. The bodhisattvas do. It gets quite detailed. What that's about is disciplining ourselves and recognizing when we make a mistake. To kill, to lie, to steal, to covet, all of that list of things is a mistake when we fail to live up to our vow. It's an error. Sometimes we see it quickly, sometimes it takes a while, but gradually we see. The way it was explained to me is, this is the spontaneous nature of a bodhisattva. That's a realized human being. They naturally do these things. That's their nature. It was a little bit like one of the teachers I listen to sometimes would say, somebody say, well, that's kind of like fake it till you make it. And that's right. It is. You know, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck and it, you know, flies like a duck, well, it's probably a duck. And so we train ourselves, we practice not to run a guilt trip, but to see our error. So sometimes you've heard those things before, perhaps you may agree with some of them, and yet you'll do something, you know, that's not fruitful. Maybe you hurt someone's feelings. You spoke sharply to your spouse or your child or neighbor, or you were selfish or self-centered or whatever it may be. It kind of comes up in your experience and you realize, oh, I can do that better. I don't have to do that. And you apologize or you try to make amends somehow and correct it. So gradually, we train ourselves. And gradually, in my path, the serene reflection path, silent illumination, you begin to see bits and pieces and things start to fit together, and life becomes extraordinarily sweet. Birth, old age, disease and injury, death. Those are not problems. Those are not problems at all. it's not that those are suffering, it's that we suffer because of our separation, our distance, the sense that I'm over here and you're over there and we're not connected. The Buddha once asked his disciples, what's the lifespan of a man? What's the lifespan of a human being? Nobody said anything. He said, one breath. You breathe in. You have a moment. You breathe out. The moment goes away. So we tend to get hooked up to memories, histories, our story, when in actual fact, everything is fresh in each moment. I describe it a little differently. What's the one thing that always exists and the only thing that exists? Now. Everything you think, everything in your memory, all those past experiences, frankly, they're questionable. Eyewitness testimony is the least reliable. So you think what you think and you've had what you've had and you've experienced, but that doesn't even exist anymore except between your ears. You think about the future and you plan, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you hope and you dream and you have fantasies, and that doesn't exist. What exists is there's a connection between Islam and Buddhism, interestingly, in the Sufis. The Sufis practice meditation of a sort and have ended up kind of on the same path. And in Arabic or whatever language in the culture they may speak, they call the Sufi masters, masters of the moment. Where does he live? Now. Where does he practice? Now. What is he doing? Now. Story of a young American man somewhere in the Middle East with this old wise man, and they're going somewhere. And I mean, it's just arduous. They're driving down this rugged trail on this four-wheel drive truck, or maybe two-wheel drive, and it's just awful. And the guy's struggling, the young man's driving, and it's getting worse, 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 worse. And he's fighting the wheel, and he's fighting the rocks, and he's fighting the road. And the master's getting more and more agitated, and all of a sudden he says, stop! What? Quit fighting. And all of a sudden, the road smoothed out. he was going with the way of the terrain. He was just, and everything was fine. When? Now. What'll happen tomorrow? Don't know. What happened yesterday? Doesn't matter. Right now, here, this moment, you have the opportunity to practice. You have the opportunity to train. You have the opportunity to realize you are a Buddha. All sentient beings, every living thing has Buddha nature. But there's only one nature. It's Buddha nature. What is the nature of Buddha nature? It's transitory, it's impermanent. It's empty, and there is no self. That's really hard for us to grasp. So don't. There's no need to grasp it. It doesn't arrive through intellectual understanding. It arrives and arises out of your base consciousness. As I'm 77, I'll be 78 next year. In some states, I'm considered a collectible. I'm an antique. You know, I have papers and everything, you know. But I've been around a while, and there's a school of Buddhism, so-called. There's different views of Buddhism. There's Tantien or Tendai in Japanese. There's Yogacara, consciousness-only school. There's Chan, there's Zen, there's all these different views. What I'm talking about is called the Tathagata Garbha. The Tathagata is what the Buddha referred to himself as, the becoming one, always becoming the Buddha. And Garbha is Sanskrit for womb. We all possess the womb of the Buddha within us. Our Buddha nature is there. In Yogacara, they talk about 8 different levels of consciousness: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. 6 basic levels: eye consciousness, ear consciousness, taste consciousness, aroma consciousness, sensation consciousness, mind consciousness. The 7th is the problem. The 7th is the ego consciousness. The 8th is the solution. It's called alaya. Alaya is where all your seeds of karma exist. Things that you've done in previous lives. Some people believe that they've lived before in bodies as human beings. Others look at it as each moment is a life. I figured it out one time. I think I've had like 2 billion, some hundreds of millions of moments. Those are lifetimes, those are lifespans. And each one of those moments, karma gets created or not. So alaya consciousness is storehouse consciousness. It's base consciousness. So as I've gotten older, I mentioned that, and the reason I mentioned it is because I can better recall early memories as a child, as a boy, childhood things, flashes. Maybe some of you have those experiences. I can remember being 2.5 and 3. Recently, I remembered before I had an ego, I was empty. There was nothing going on between the ears. There were other beings going blah 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 blah. I didn't see any of it. I didn't speak English. I was just present. Alaya consciousness. We're born when you see a baby, a newborn baby looking, just it understands nothing. It's just taking it in. Amazing. And so one could say the true self is no self, which is kind of accurate, but it's the absence of, emptiness is the absence of something. And emptiness, shunyata, is the absence of separateness. We rise together and we depart together in this moment. And so the practice then to begin to understand that is to take those 16 precepts as a basis for your awareness and begin to sit. And start with just a few minutes in the morning. Gradually, you might feel comfortable. Extend that further in time and just let yourself rest in that base consciousness, that empty awareness of all that is. You can hear it, you can see it, you can smell it, you can taste it. It's outside you, it's inside you, it is you. It's quite remarkable and it's quite ordinary. It's really fabulous and it's no big deal simultaneously. But it brings great peace. It brings great compassion. all of a sudden others are more important than we are. Rather than fighting for our territory, we realize territory belongs to all of us, and there's plenty of room for everything. So that's kind of a lot of stuff to sort of digest. And Aidan and I were talking, some people, the last time I spoke, expressed some interest in learning how to do Zazen, just sitting. And so we talked about maybe having a seminar some Sunday after a talk. So speak to Aidan about that. And anyone that has any questions is always welcome to ask. And I will do the best I can to answer and to help you with your practice. Oh, one thing. I sort of left this out. Some of us have had spiritual experiences of uplifting. And those are precious. But they're not awakening. The best way to describe awakening is you're asleep. You're unconscious. The sun comes through the window in the morning and you go, oh, and you're awake. It's very unspectacular and really quite wonderful. It's nothing special. It's just waking up to what really and truly is so. And everything becomes effective. Everything becomes useful. Everything becomes valuable. Have I said anything that disturbs anyone? Have I said anything that piques your curiosity? Does anyone have questions? Would you like to ask a question now? Anybody? No? Okay. Thank you so much for your attention. It was wonderful being with you this morning.